Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Everyday Bitcoin, a younger Bitcoin podcast focusing on Bitcoin's use as money and its adoption. So there's no macro talk here. There's no price talk here. Just talking about Bitcoin as money and chatting with people that are pushing the fighting the good fight about adoption and just facilitating how everybody could use it in their everyday lives. Coming at you today, recording on February 18th, 2026, about block height 937,279 at a current exchange rate with the US dollar of about $66,100. Price has been up, it's been down, doesn't really matter. What does matter is that I'm here today with a friend of mine, Julian Figueroa. Julian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Keith. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. I think we've been trying to make this happen about a month now or a couple weeks. So I'm glad we're finally here. And so you are involved, I guess, well, definitely with one company called GetBased. But so I guess I was going to say your channel, the Exit Manual, is also kind of like it's underneath GetBased, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So then are you able to explain a little bit? I guess before we get into GetBased, just a little bit about your Bitcoin journey and like how you found it and what brings you here today.
Speed run time, baby. 2013, wanted to buy drugs on the internet. Couldn't do it with cash. Found Bitcoin. Used Bitcoin to buy said drugs on internet. Ignored that Bitcoin for 3 years. Woke up in 2016. Realized that it went up a bunch and I probably shouldn't have spent so much on drugs. Decided to look into it deeper. Put in every last ounce of student loans I didn't spend on university. That allowed me to basically start my own business in video production. Did that for quite a few years. And then in 2018, 2019, I got rug pulled for 80% or so of my Bitcoin. Decided to make a YouTube video as therapy. I'm speed running it. Decided to make a YouTube video as therapy. Made YouTube videos off the side of my desk for 3, 4, 5 years. And then decided to start getting into some more serious filmmaking, documentary work. Met Isabella through this, just a random DM. I was going to do a documentary. Said, hey, you want to come do it? We do this documentary, and then we decide, let's do a full-on Bitcoin media company. Partnered up with my other friend, Adam O'Brien, who runs Bitcoin Well, one of the biggest, you know, Bitcoin publicly traded companies in Canada. And here we are, 2 years. Ooh, is it 2 years? Yeah, it's 2 years into this journey of going all in on Bitcoin and, in a broader sense, sovereignty-based media. So the stuff that we do, if you haven't watched the show, Exit Manual, is sort of like an edutainment style look into the world of Bitcoin. You got Isabella has BTC Isla. It's like the sister show. Mm-hmm. Soon enough, Adam will have his own version of a show, except his will actually be about Christianity, not about Bitcoin. From there, who knows? We're always looking for more talent.
Oh, that's super cool. What year did you say you were buying drugs with Bitcoin?
2013.
Wow. And then it was 2016 that you realized.
Yeah. Maybe. I was like, oh, could be something cool here.
2013, way back when. I was heavily at the time, heavily involved with, I guess, RuneScape. I was like an admin on an online community that was quite large, actually. And I think about that sometimes. I still wonder how it was possible. I never came across Bitcoin back then.
Because didn't people use it in like some MMOs? I remember there was this like one MMO I saw screenshots of, and people were like, I just bought this sword for 860 Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think definitely at the time, for sure. I don't know how I just never like had direct, because I had like tons of friends all over the world via RuneScape that I would be in constant contact with, and obviously we're kind of the nerdy bunch, so I'm just like surprised that nobody, at least that I never heard about it. It could have been. But alrighty. So 2013, 2016. And when did you say you first did the... Because for those that are listening who don't know, I also know both the people mentioned, Isa and Adam. And yes. So when did you say you and Isa first did that video?
We met in person for the first time in December of 2023. And then right after filming that documentary, January 2024, we said, let's do this as a media company. Okay. So we bootstrapped it. We messed around. We didn't quite figure out what shows to do or like what to really do in the first year. We were just kind of actually just operating like a boutique video agency. Sorry, my stupid phone. And then Isabella started her kind of like main BTC East Coast show August of 2024. And then that a whole year later of like learning the ins and outs of long form YouTube. We did another show with Adam, but it wasn't quite like a big thing. We decided, hey, let's do Exit Manual. Let's do its own channel too. That was the big unlock for us. Is we thought in the beginning, let's just stick everything on this get based channel. It's not how people consume media anymore. That was like a 2017, 2018 relic, this idea of media channels. Everything is about personalities now. And you can have a company that just owns multiple channels, but people only want to see one specific type of content per channel. Okay. But yeah, we've learned a lot. And the journey started, the real YouTube journey, I think, started with Isabella's show in August 24. And then my show launched last year, end of August 25. And Adam's is coming very soon. I'm hoping in March 26.
Ooh. And you said that was no Bitcoin whatsoever, or just like heavy Christianity?
Basically no Bitcoin. We'll see. Like it's YouTube really rewards narrowing perspective down to a single niche, because the way that the YouTube algorithm works, if we want to talk some inside baseball here, is that sure, the algorithm kind of understands a ranking system for each topic or each kind of like interest point. And so if you start making videos about Bitcoin, the algorithm will look at your video. It'll look at what is the retention, what is the click-through rate on your thumbnail, you know, what is maybe the overall quality of the video. And it'll give it some type of internal score that you and I don't know. And that score will dictate how many times it decides to throw it on someone's front page or up next or suggested video tab. You keep, you know, scoring higher on all those metrics, you know, click through, you know, viewer retention, holding retention, not having it like peel off, all these different like little internal metrics. I don't know how they're weighed, but that's how algorithms work, is they just give everything a score. If you do well enough on the score, you just start getting pushed. And so, yeah, essentially we've been in this long process of learning all the different elements, which ones we have an instinctual feel for being weighed more than others. And we're finding that sweet spot point of like, how do we satisfy this? And then also satisfy our own creative vision and our own thesis and our own voice and opinions on certain things. And when people ask like, how do you do it? It's like, it's just like, it's a game of, if it's like a sport, you know, you got to analyze all the chess moves.
Right? Yeah.
Every single turn you take in chess, there's like the number one best move you could make, and then there's like the second best move you could make, and then the third best, and the fourth, and it's hard to sometimes take the first best move every single time, because it opens up a whole other web of possibilities, and it's expensive sometimes to take the first move, but you balance it, right? So yeah
okay. Yeah, I have a little bit of experience with YouTube. I mean I still have a channel, but I'm not active on it, but I was able to get up to like 1600 subscribers. I was more so active right after the pandemic, but then the last 2 years, not really. But it was always frustrating to feel like I was always slightly torn, but I think ultimately, well, I guess slightly torn between doing exactly what I wanted to do, but then also trying to please the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Then I guess in a certain sense, if you do what you want to do, ideally the people will come to you. But then obviously it's up to the platform to also make you visible. So do you ever do you ever find yourselves revising what you maybe wanted to do, or maybe not, I don't want to say holding back, but potentially just changing, I guess, the script because you think that the algorithm won't play nice with you?
Yeah, all the time. But I like to sometimes like swap out the word algorithm for just audience. Like, we know the types of people that watch our videos. Like, if we make this choice, will these people who don't know who we are, will they bounce? Like, am I doing something to someone who doesn't know me that hurts my credibility? So, you know, there's this balance. I think when we start our channels, we're aiming for like the biggest swath of people possible. We're constantly like introducing ourselves in those first few videos because nobody knows who we are. We have to start very humble and just assume that no one gives a shit. And we have to, by the end of the video, prove ourselves, give something like entertainment value or educational value by the end of the video. If you don't entertain someone or you don't educate them, then they're just not going to come back for more. But you get a few reps in, you build that credibility that like, okay, this guy's going to deliver on this front every week, every 2 weeks, every month, every day. You build that support base, and then you get this floor, like the Bitcoin price floor, that people will just show up and, you know, and then you can ease on the gas a little bit and, you know, cause it's an input output thing. It depends what you want to maximize. Like right now, I still really want to gun for like 100-200K, but I know that the Bitcoin niche has very few channels that big. And so I have to make this decision. Am I just going to grind out to get those 100-200K from, you know, Simply Bitcoin and Bitcoin Magazine subscribers? Or am I going to try and get, you know, I'm at 37. Am I going to try and get the other, you know, 63 that I need? Am I going to try and get them from other niches? That opens up the possibility of alienating my current audience. And so you have to kind of like bridge a little bit between genres, and there's a lot of things to consider, but ultimately, like, I want to get to this point where I can just develop some like deeper relationships with my current viewership, you know, and really ask them too. It's like, what do you want to see from me? I mean, I'm an actor. Like, this is my thing. Some people are not, you know, performative males like I am. I like to kind of be crazy. I like to entertain people. I like to always challenge myself creatively in videos too, and really push like what on earth can we actually pull off in 1 week? Because that's the only commitment I really have, is it's got to be every single week, and it should hopefully be better than the last video. From there, the sky's the limit, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I definitely, what you said earlier about it being about personalities, I also learned that more so when I stopped being so active with my channel, because I just realized with my own viewing habits that, like, and like you said, building the base, like the Bitcoin floor, mm-hmm. That the people that I subscribe to and that I follow, like, if they put a video out, I'm gonna watch it just because, like you said, I like the person or the personality. I like the content. I know it's gonna at least be like their standard. So, like, I know I won't be wasting my time even just clicking on the video. So, you know, you said makes a lot of sense. And when did you start Get Based? Because you're growing like super fast on Get, or not, sorry, not Get Based, the exit manual. When did you start that again?
The exit manual was started end of August last year.
Wow. Okay. And you're already at 37, 38, you said, 1,000?
Yeah. Like, just for context too, like, everyone thinks that this is like, you know, maybe a game of luck or whatever. I like the Get Based channel, which is like your OG channel. It was called Kinetic Finance for a while. It was 3 years for me to get to 1,000. And I was putting out like a video every 2 weeks for a while on there. It took 3 years for me to get to 1,000 because I just, like, I didn't know what I was doing. I only made what I wanted to make. Uh-huh. I didn't really care for the audience. I was like, this is what I feel people need to know. This is like a random topic I want to talk about. It was like very like egocentric. And it was like, screw the algorithm, I want to do my thing. It's like, okay, well, I got what I gunned for. You know, every now and then I had one video pop off, but there was no consistency, and therefore like an audience didn't form. And so it takes a while to learn sometimes from that stuff. But we realized, like, okay, before we even started Get Based, we were like, who is the demographic for this? Like, what do we want to do? Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different, because the main Bitcoin viewership audience that we found, it's 35 to 45. That's like the core. We think that the older you are, the less, in some ways, the less patient you are with compounding returns. You're like 15 years away from retirement, or 20 versus 30 or 40. I had a feeling, I was like, this Bitcoin thing is going to go on a long time, right? If I cultivate a whole bunch of people who are in their upper 40s and we have like a bear year, they're all going to be like, you know, screw you. You just like, you go to me into this thing. I'm not going to wait. Like, I gotta get on with my life. But if we focus on Gen Z, who are coming out fresh, their whole world is being rattled right now with the job market. So they have to be open-minded, just because none of the old rules work. Then we can start with like a good cohort of people that will sit through whatever the price of Bitcoin does, and hopefully also be interested in other topics. So we really like planned that out. We knew that no matter what I do, it's probably going to be male leaning. It's very like INTJ, big picture, macro. So we're like, okay, you know, we'll consider the average viewer is probably going to be male. They're going to be between hopefully 25 to 34. We're going to like aim for that, maybe even a little bit younger. What do these people want to see? Are they looking for guidance? Like, where are they? Like, how much money are they making? What side of the states or Canada are they living in? And then, you know, we have that little guy, we'll call him Ben, because there's just a lot of Bens in our space. But we made this whole audience avatar and we said, hey, that's like, these are who the videos are for. Like, we need to get 100,000 of these Bens, and we know that 100,000 are out there.
Yeah.
And from there, it's just like, every time we write something, we ask, like, is Ben going to watch this? Right? Like, would he be interested in this video, or is this totally off base out of his interests? But yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
So we did differently.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear the insight of the, I guess, more so the creator, and how they approach all this. So far, I guess would be the biggest hurdle you faced in, well, I guess with the exit manual more so focused on that first. Yeah. What's been the biggest hurdle? Because you're going really fast, obviously.
Yeah. I think it's, we've always had this idea from the start that we were going to lead with Bitcoin, because that was like what I knew the best. And I also know what my competition is, which is people doing the desk videos, or kind of like news. And we thought, okay, we know that BTC ESLA proved that people love this like different style of Bitcoin content where it's like outdoors and a little bit different.
Yeah.
And it's more storytelling. So like, we proved that there was demand there. And so we were like, okay, how do I basically just recreate what ESLA is doing? But I'm going to put my unique flair on it. What's my unique flair? It's like, I'm a lot more autistic than Isabella is. I will obsess over very particular details. I also have like kind of a darker sense of humor, you know, and I love watching that stuff, you know, like Danny Gonzalez and Drew Gooden and Eddie Burback and like all these like, you know, upstart, like self-made YouTube comedians, Trevor Wallace. And I thought, hey, like I used to do this stuff in school plays. So like let's inject that in there.
Yeah.
In terms of what's been the hardest has been, we've had like a lot of easy wins. Like we really knew out the gate, these first 10 videos that came out on the channel, like the intro, the hidden tax that rich people pay, the 100, like we planned this all out, you know, months ahead of time, like what these first 5-10 were going to be. From there, we're like, okay, this did way better than we expected. I wasn't expecting to start pivoting into like other forms of topics probably until like a year or like a year and a half in. And now we're realizing, hey, not only is the Bitcoin price sucking, so general interest in Bitcoin is down, but we have this like big subscriber base that we've built trust with in a relatively like quick period of time. We should take some more risks with other topics. The challenge has just been figuring out like, well, what other stuff outside the Bitcoin and finance realm really appeals to this group of people? What appeals to Ben? You know, what, like, I don't want to do something random. Like I can't start talking about Pokemon, even though I'm a huge like Pokemon fan. They're not going to find interest in that. I don't know if I could talk about like pop culture, like movies, like, you know, but okay, maybe Ben's interested in like technology in general. And then one of the rabbit holes I found myself going down, and you put feelers out there, like you use Twitter and you use these other platforms to put feelers out there, is stoicism. I know that a lot of Bitcoiners are really big readers. Like you kind of have to be, you're going through all these books and you know, you got a bookshelf behind you. I don't know. Do you know about the Stoics?
Of course. I have Meditations by Marcus Aurelius behind me.
Beautiful. You're going to love this week's episode. So it took me a little while to realize like, oh damn, there's actually a really big overlap in interest between that topic and that kind of like framing and Bitcoin. And so we did like a whole episode of this. I teased it in the last one. I brought some Marcus Aurelius in. And then this episode is called, if you don't understand Stoicism, you don't understand Bitcoin.
Ooh.
And we're like super excited to see how that does. Cause I think there's a potential to pull non-Bitcoiners that are just Stoics that like kind of know a little bit about Bitcoin, like interest them in the topic, because there's this whole Stoic niche on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then I think we'll still be able to like get that good floor of Bitcoiners who will just watch, you know, the next Bitcoin video I make. So it's figuring out those things. We call them bridging videos. Those have been like the most challenging ones, because it just takes like a lot of walking around and doing some data cross-checking to kind of figure it out. We're trying to figure out right now for Isabella's channel. She's super fit. They have like a gym down there in Isla Mujeres.
Yeah.
We know that Bitcoiners do care a lot about health. The question that we're just trying to figure out is like, are they actually watching health and fitness content, or are they just doing their own thing? Do they care more about diet, or do they care about workouts? And so we're thinking like, that's probably her bridge. That's her like next closest interest. And maybe there's alignment there with the Bitcoiners. But it's those bridging videos. Those are the hardest things I would say so far in figuring it out. But it's stuff you got to do in the bear market, right? We can't talk about like the world's best inflation hedge when our 5-year compound annual return is like 8% or less. So
yeah,
it won't be like that forever, but you know, you got to build a business and yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. A lot of insight and things I never really kind of realized or thought about. At least my opinion would be that Bitcoin would probably be more interested in, well, obviously health, but I guess like exercise and workout stuff and not diet. I feel like a lot of Bitcoiners...
Just eat steak, right?
Exactly. I feel like a lot of Bitcoiners are already like, already set in their ways diet-wise, whether it be the like a strict carnivore diet or obviously prioritizing whole foods, you know, not processed garbage and eating meat, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like at least my two cents would be probably more interested in what they can do physically. But that's very interesting. And it seems like definitely at the beginning of the of Isa's channel, there was a lot of crossover into what's actually happening on the island specifically. Mm-hmm. But I feel like of late it is now, well, obviously using the island and the community there as the backdrop for everything. But I feel like it's more so you guys have been venturing more to a general Bitcoin content topic and less specifically having content that relates directly to the island. Am I correct in thinking that?
Yeah. And this is a really good like strategic thing that we figured out, I would say, about 6 months into our channel. And it was that there just isn't a lot of interest in watching the circular economy / spending Bitcoin thing. We thought it was a really interesting story as Bitcoiners.
Yeah,
it really has zero appeal outside. And even within Bitcoiners, like the people who are there to see it as like digital gold, like they just don't give a shit because it's sort of like against their worldview. And so it's really important that we do these things. Like it's very important that we create circular economies and, you know, spend Bitcoin. And I'm a huge advocate for it, even in these like non-circular economy videos. Like I'm always saying, like, go spend it. Like, we got to use this shit. But in terms of like a lead magnet, it just doesn't work. Like, it's just, there isn't like a market for, oh crap, I want to see Bitcoin being spent in this country. It's not to say like the content's bad or anything. Like, Joe Nakamoto does like the best videos going around. But I think what he's seen himself lately is that there's a lot more interest in people learning about Bitcoin mining in other countries than Bitcoin economies in other countries, right? Like his videos on Bitcoin mines in Iceland or Africa or whatever, those get way more views than like, here's a guy that lives on Bitcoin or a town that lives on Bitcoin. Like these you just have the data to know where people go and you have to follow that to an extent as a creator. It's not to say that, you know, oh, I got to sell out to whatever the audience wants to make, but you can't force people to be interested in what you're interested in. You've got to find like a proven market. And right now it's just not a big enough phenomena that people will just watch that, you know?
Yeah.
People spending Bitcoin.
That makes sense. And
however, that's not to say that I don't have a massive spending Bitcoin video thing in the works that we think is actually going to get like a ton of views outside the Bitcoin niche, but I will leave it at that.
I'm excited for that. Super excited for that. And you're totally right that at least I'm not sure exactly how much you use it like every day, but me, like full Bitcoin standard, like use it as much as I possibly can as money. But I realize that I'm like very like 0.1 of the 1% that truly like do it that way. And I sometimes think the more people are like me, but then when I meet people in the real world, and like even I recently started a Bitcoin meetup. Actually, you've had 2 meetups already, but nonetheless, I bring this up because like one of the people that came like didn't want to spend Bitcoin at the Bitcoin meetup. And I was like, why? I was like, what are we doing? Like, I don't know. I just don't comprehend that. But I guess everyone's different.
Yeah.
And have you, like, now that you have a base, that you have obviously a viewership base and audience base, what's your take on the general feel for your audience? Are people more so digital gold hedging, or do you have a decent amount of base that is actually like hardcore Bitcoiner? If you even have like insight into that.
I don't think my base is super into like technical stuff with Bitcoin. I think there's a bit of crossover with Joe and Issa with like the Bitcoin standard people, but like again, like you said, it's 0.1% of like a small group of people, right? Like we've run the numbers. I would say there are maybe 150,000 to 200,000 people on planet Earth that consume more than 30 minutes of Bitcoin content a week. That's a very, I would estimate it. Like we like try and find a video that is not just like a Michael Saylor keynote that has over 150,000 views on YouTube. That's like about using Bitcoin or what like the Bitcoin case is for 5 million or whatever. It's like, you will not find those videos. So that kind of just tells you like that's the ceiling. There's about 150, 200,000 of us that are interested in macro or use cases or whatever on a regular basis. You're going to find outliers, but that's like kind of the median. And so in terms of my audience's interests, I've been really trying to talk to them in the way that I would talk to someone post Bitcoin standard, which is like, I don't want you to become hyper obsessed with Bitcoin. I don't want you to be looking at the price every single day. I don't want you to be thinking of like BIP 110 and quantum. Like, you know, I'll make a little thing on it just to get the info out there. But like, I don't want you thinking about that. I want you to use it as a savings account and be excellent and like do really well in your community and be optimistic about the future. Like Bitcoin is just a springboard, as it was for me, to do the things that I wanted to do. I wanted to get my time back. I wanted to take some risks, and Bitcoin allowed me to do that. And maybe when I got into it, I was lucky. And at the time, I was able to capitalize on it very quickly. And it's been a bit harder recently, where like you get people into Bitcoin and then they're all messaging me a year later and they're like, I'm down. How am I down? Like, you were up after a year. What happened? And I say, hey, you know, just keep buying and or live on it. And like, you can like, I'll buy it from you in 10 years if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm working hard. Like I know that I'm going to crush it and make money, and I'm not going to change my thesis on it in 10 years. So it's like, you go buy it today. If you really think like I'm just trying to sell you shit, like you can sell me your Bitcoin in 10 years. Like I'll be buying it in 10 years the same way that I'm buying it today. And I'm only preaching stuff that I actually do. It's like, you know, I have eliminated all other forms of savings. I got rid of my emergency fund that I had over COVID. And it's just like every penny that is not spent directly, like I don't convert all my paychecks to Bitcoin, because then if I spend the Bitcoin, I'm just taking like a needless 2% haircut. But anything that's a savings thing, it's like a one-way street. It just goes into Bitcoin. We keep stacking. And if I have something that is more important in my life than Bitcoin, then I spend it. At the same time, I want people to think of it like money. And I there's times where I actually find the utility of Bitcoin way easier than going out and like swapping currencies or spending my MasterCard in another country. That's a, like, there's a great medium of exchange use case for Bitcoin, which is like, if you travel, it's like on your phone already. Like, you know, but like half the places I go to, like, they don't even take credit card. And I don't want to go to like, you know, I don't want to carry paper. But if I'm going somewhere with a Bitcoin, you know, circular economy, like I have a phone full of like 200, 300 bucks of Bitcoin, like ready to go. It's my money. And then in the local economy, there are a ton of people that give me discounts if I pay with Bitcoin. So I'll do that too, right? Like I'll use it because that makes sense.
Oh, really?
Sorry, you're going to say something.
Your local, yeah. Well, two things. Why 2%? Is that like on the fee for the buying and selling that you said?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay, if I convert my paychecks into Bitcoin, you know, yeah, like if I convert my whole thing, but I actually need to spend some of it, you know, okay, I have to convert it. If I convert my 100% of my paycheck into Bitcoin, and then, you know, I got to pay my rent, then I got to also sell it back into fiat. Cause like, you know, I try my best to convince everyone to take Bitcoin, but you can't force everyone to take it. Right. So there's just times you need fiat. So I don't need to like, if I am trying to 100% live on the Bitcoin standard, like, I don't know, like, who am I trying to prove that to? Right. Also there are times where like I take out debt. And so I'm going to have fiat because I live beyond my means sometimes. Like, I'm trying not to, but sometimes you do. And Bitcoin doesn't work. Like, you can't, you know, have a good credit score and buy Bitcoin with it, right? Like, you need fiat sometimes. That's the perk of the fiat system, is sometimes you can use it and you can live outside your means and you just do so responsibly, right? But yeah.
Okay.
Like, we you know, like, I'll give you an example, like Get Based, we didn't know what we were doing for a bit, and we lost quite a bit of money, and we were racking up losses, but we had like a little bit of a Bitcoin treasury, and we took out a loan against it, because if we didn't, you know, someone was going to have to skip getting paid for the month, or we'd have to lay someone off. And it was like, well, you know, like, we got to get some fiat in there. So thankfully we had that option. But yeah, life comes at you pretty quick, and the Bitcoin standard works, but right now, you know, you still have to interact with the fiat system in order to live outside your means. Eventually we'll be able to borrow Bitcoin against our Bitcoin, I guess, or maybe someone will just lend us Bitcoin on a reputation score. I have no idea. But right now, like, we live in a debt-based system, and, you know, no one's going to just lend me Bitcoin just because they like me, right? So
yeah, that makes sense. I sometimes think similarly, at least in terms of like paying rent.
Yeah,
like, because the obviously I have to sell the Bitcoin to send a dollar payment. And I sometimes think, well, why bother paying, or why bother transferring it over to Bitcoin to begin with? But then I just think, well, in the event that there's a massive appreciation over the course of the month, I'll be happy that it was sitting there. But at times I do think similarly, like, maybe I should do a little bit of my income into dollars and not just straight convert. But so far it's been fine. So far so good. But I obviously understand people that choose not to, or that feel safe for not doing that. And the other thing I was going to mention was, do people like in your comments specifically, has anyone ever reached out to you like thanking you for like showing them the way or the exit and getting into Bitcoin?
Not lately. Everybody who bought when I made my first video is down like 40%, and I'm getting so much of that recently, and I'm like, okay,
really?
Well, I'll make a video to address it. Yeah, so it's like, okay, one day I'll be thanked for the gains, but it could be a little while, right? Like, I just happen to make videos at the top, I guess. But I, like, really from the start, the promise was never you're going to get rich quick. Like, I keep pounding the drum on that. This is like a don't get poor slowly scheme, right?
Yeah.
You're getting poor fast right now, but you're not going to get poor over the long run on this. You know, and again, if I'm wrong, and we can all be totally wrong about all this stuff, I'm not shaken. Like, I will die on this hill. And I said it in my last video too. It's just like, if I'm wrong, you know, and Bitcoin goes to zero, it's like, cool, I'll own the whole thing. And then if it's still zero after I own the whole thing, then you know, I'll make it all back. Like, you gotta have this like ruthless confidence to not get shaken. For me, it's like, the older you get, the riskier it is to put all this work and time that you've accumulated into something that you have no control over. But I've submitted to the fact that Bitcoin is going to do things I don't like. And I've also realized after 10 years, it is so much worse. The feeling of greed and like anxiety is so much worse for me when the price is going up than when it's going down. It took a little bit to flip it, but like, you know, 5 or so years in, I was like, oh my God. I get like a lot more anxious and coulda, woulda, shoulda when the price goes up versus when it goes down, because I earn in fiat. So I'm just getting more sats when it goes down. It's just a discount sale to me, because my mindset is like locked that this is the money that I want. This is the money of the future. This is what I want to move my time and energy into. If I was flaky in the Bitcoin thesis, then yeah, I would look at like the drop as in like, shit, I'm losing my fiat purchasing power. Right? Like I should have more fiat at the end of this, but I'm not. But now I'm looking at it like, great, I get more Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, the world still obviously doesn't understand this thing, and I get to be on the front lines to like see that very clearly. I talked to like 100 kids at university. They have no idea what Bitcoin's about, and they're all going to be starting jobs soon, and they're all going to be figuring out like, well, you know, where do I put my money? They're not buying gold, right? Like, this is the internet generation. Like, they're going to figure it out. And so it's like, well, this is a blessing. This is a blessing when the price goes down. So yeah, I just try not to let myself get too rattled by that stuff. And then hopefully the audience just like understands that from my perspective. But the ultimate takeaway is like, look, if you yourself are like a vessel for earning, and you know what your superpower is, and you know how to enhance the world with your superpower, like the money will just gravitate towards you. It's like you become like a money vacuum or like a money magnet. Like, I really believe if you have a superpower and you know how to give it to the world, you will find a very obvious and clear path to live a prosperous life.
Love that. I'm currently rethinking some life things, and yeah, I think switching things up and really gonna try to find my way how to make money in the Bitcoin space. So I want to contribute more to it rather than doing
what is your superpower? What comes easy to you that is very hard to other people?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I have an obsessive personality, so whatever I like and find, I can't help but completely like dedicate my time to and learning as much as I possibly can. And the more I learn, the better I feel, and the more I want to learn to feel better. People tell me I write well. I feel like I have a lot of skills, but none are like superior than others, if that makes sense. But it could just be my own bias of my own self thinking I'm less than I am. I don't know. It's kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none when it comes to like traditional things. Because unfortunately, well, I don't want to say unfortunately, because I've had a great past decade in my current career, but like nothing I do in my current career can translate to pretty much anything else but the industry I work in and doing what I do. So it's unfortunate now that I'm trying to look into Bitcoin. It's like none of these typical finance, engineering, developing, legal, traditional fields apply to me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to become a programmer because it's obvious that the future is AI and it'll just be senior devs commanding the AI. And that I'm not going to like, I don't know, go to law school to try to like work on a legal team as an entry position, like after a bunch of debt. So it's kind of frustrating, but I'm hoping to find my way because it's become clear that I want to be contributing to the advancement of Bitcoin and like building towards something, dedicating my time and energy to a better cause than hanging lights in a very wasteful industry.
Yeah.
Which I love doing. It doesn't feel like work and I get paid well, but I don't know. Those are things I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Well, the writing is a really, it's a really big one. And I think it's like similar to the coding thing. I did a video about how Latin had this interesting progression where it was sort of like the default through Rome. And that was like the one language and people got kind of sick of it because it got, it just became almost like corporatized in some way. There's this very flat emotionlessness to the Latin language. And that's how all the other languages kind of like spurted out, is like the French and the Italians and the Spanish and the English. Like they all have like very different ways of expressing emotion and what is a pejorative term in one language versus like the other. And AI is sort of holding up this mirror to the really uncreative people out there. And if you're a really good writer, you can very easily identify when something's written by an LLM, because the way that they've, you know, been designed, the predictive modeling of like the next word, the next sentence, it forces them to fall into cliches. The models like deteriorate over time. And then if all their source data is everyone writing the same, you get this version of English that just trends towards kind of what happened with Latin and then from there. And so what I'm getting at with this is that if you are able to develop a very unique style of writing that you can find demand on, then I actually think everyone says, oh, it's a terrible time to be a writer because AI is writing all your emails. It's like, no, it's the opposite. Like, distinct writing is going to flourish and it's going to be so easy to differentiate from AI slop.
Yeah.
And people are going to be craving that stuff en masse. The same way that right now, like, I don't think it's a trend, like vinyl sales are at like, you know, 60s and 70s levels.
Yeah.
And they've held that way now for like 6 years. Like flip phone sales are up. Like there is this, it's not like people are degrading back to like inferior technologies, but people want this sense of like sincerity and authenticity in everything. There's this huge demand for it. And AI is like creating this like massive vacuum in authenticity. And so it just allows our like humanity to really be, you know, even more of a superpower than it has been in the last forever.
Well said. I agree. Yeah. It is interesting. I feel like the AI has advanced so quickly. And at first, everybody was kind of obsessed with it. Like, oh my God, look what AI can generate for me instantly. And but now, I guess it was a quick fad. And now that the novelty of it has worn off and people realize that, holy crap, the whole world around me is just becoming an authentic slop. And it's like, I want to actually focus on finding real human, one, connection, and two, human made things, whether it be articles or a painting or a video or I recently on my website, I have a large guide called Bitcoin is for Everyone. I was using just regular AI images for my sections, but I recently commissioned a person on Noster to actually make hand-drawn legit art for each section, and it's awesome.
That's love super it. Cool.
Love there it. You go. Yeah, obviously people are like, you could do it for free with AI, but it's like, yeah, but I'd rather pay someone in Bitcoin to do their passion and get a great result and know that I'm helping the Bitcoin economy and, you know, supporting a fellow Bitcoiner and Noster user and artist. So,
But don't just look at it like it's, you know, it's not like a benevolence thing only. It's not like I need to support my human brethren. It's like there is a tangible aspect. There's like a, the problem with machines sometimes is they trend towards entropy. And so it's like either the result of an image is completely predictable or it's completely incomprehensible mess, which is why you get the six fingers and the characters on jars look weird and all that stuff. But there's something with human work and it's the subconscious just taps into it. And so it's marketably better than whatever AI can produce because there's a subconscious element that goes into the creation of human art that just LLMs cannot recreate. Right. Yeah. There are very few happy accidents, I'll just say, with AI generated art. It's like what you see is what you get, you know?
Yeah.
There's no thought. When the only input is three words and this black box of data, it's like, can you really have subtleties?
No.
Not unless you tell the machine to have subtleties, right?
Yeah. And you spend mass amounts of time prompting it. Yeah. And it still won't really do what you want it to do. At least in my experience. It's you can only prompt it so far and it just gives you the same thing. It's like, okay, this is useless.
I'm a huge fan of AI. I love it. And so my take on it, I don't like it when people just want it to do everything for you. But what I found is there are very specific things that you can get it to do in your creative process that save you immense amounts of time. And we need to view it more through that lens. Is this actually saving me time? And is that time saved, increasing the quality of my output? If so, then AI is a huge net benefit to everyone. And
yes.
What the haters don't understand is hey, maybe I just need to make a freaking PowerPoint to sell a video idea. And I would, if I had unlimited time, I would hand draw some art and put it in there. But frankly, one person is going to see it and I want to give them a better picture of what's going on in my head. If AI can generate that, that's a huge time save. That's a huge quality upgrade. There's other things that I do. I've been experimenting a lot more with AI video in my exit manual episodes, just random shit that I was bro, if I had $1 million and a team of VFX artists, I would do this.
Yeah.
Now I can do it with AI. So why not mess around? I want to pat myself on the back, but we did this whole episode in the Renaissance and it's sort of I could talk about it, but it would be really fun to show it. You know, and maybe we can have some fun with it. And we're like, okay, we'll make a couple of AI images, but instead of it making it feel robotic and generated, let's give it this human feel. And you can get these filters so that things move at 12 FPS and it feels like a little paper slideshow. And it's not a common AI art style. Usually the AI art styles that you see, everything is very slick and kind of spongy looking. But there's a whole bunch of ways you can use this stuff to make it feel very tactile. And yes, if some people know it's AI, that's fine. But there's going to be a cohort of people that don't actually think it's AI at all because they haven't seen that art style. But with the tools, you can do something novel. And then last point on this, it's not a zero-sum game. Henry Cavill, when he was in the Superman Justice League movie, he was also shooting Mission Impossible. He had a mustache. They spent $3 million on a team of dozens of VFX artists to get rid of that mustache. This is only six years ago. It's a 30-cent prompt now.
Yeah.
And guess what? If you fucked up on your indie film with the same thing, your indie film of like 10 grand, you can hire some kid in Pakistan and he can remove the mustache for 30 cents now. Like, that's so cool. Job created. Everybody's work gets better. And it's great. And it's like, yeah, you can make crappy content with it, sure. But oh my God, does it open up a world of possibilities that we've never had before? Mm-hmm. It's like, I remember there was this saying a couple of years ago. It's like, ideas are cheap, execution's what matters. Totally inverted. Ideas are like so valuable, execution's never been freaking easier. You know?
Yeah. Yes, I would agree. As long as the idea is there. And plus, when you have a good idea, you could always reiterate on it and also develop it further. But if the idea sucks, then the end result's not going to be as good. I definitely need to, I don't want to say get better, but get better at AI. Or I guess finding more use cases. And now's the perfect time. But I like how you use Maple, big privacy guy there with Maple. But unfortunately, like, I just set up a home server and I had to go to Gemini.
Oh, are you doing the Claudebot thing or
no? I was just struggling to set up a new Ubuntu server to like for Home Assistant and image. I've essentially been de-googling my life as much as possible, and now I'm de-googling from Google Photos. And now the last thing, my last tie to Google will be Google Maps, because it's just Google Maps is just so powerful. Unfortunately, nonetheless, I definitely need to look into, especially with this potential life transition, how I can leverage AI in my benefit and help me my writing and other stuff. Cool. Well, I know we should wind down. I know you have to go in a couple minutes. This has been an awesome chat. Definitely didn't think it would go to where it's gone, but I'm happy it has. All about AI and I guess just non-directly Bitcoin matters, but it's cool to obviously to learn more about you and what you've been doing and hear your story. Is there anything you'd like to add? Anything?
Stay optimistic, fam. The Bitcoiners are like the world doesn't have to fall apart in order for Bitcoin to succeed. I really try and remind people that. The people who are like, everything is terrible in macro and the Bitcoiners are going to win because the infinite debt spiral, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you have no control over that, right? Like, take care of yourself. The macro will play out how the macro is going to play out. And, live a good life, find your superpower and use Bitcoin as your savings account. And trust, verify, it's all going to work out in 10 years, 20 years. Just give yourself some time. Make sure that you can live long enough to actually see the outcome too. I think you're seeing a lot of people who are optimistic. The most optimistic people about the future are spending so much time on their health because they want to be around for it. So yeah. Those are all things in your control. So focus on that and you're good to go.
Nice. Love it. Good message all around. And I'll include all kinds of links in the description. Is there anywhere in particular you want to send people? Aside, I guess just
Exit Manual, baby. Let me know what you think of the show. We're cranking them out every Thursday, and it's a ton of fun. But thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great to chat and see you again. Maybe we'll see each other in person sooner or later. It'd be cool.
You coming down to Vegas?
I don't think so. Probably not.
Oh yeah,
but I didn't go last year.
I don't even know that's happening this year, man. There's some crazy stuff going on.
Wait, is it not happening? What do you mean it's not happening?
I don't know. Like,
you dropping hot off the
press. We'll get into it, but like, look at the price of NACA and they acquired the company that's going to the conference. Like, I don't know.
didn't they just like...
They gave everyone free tickets last year.
They did?
How are they making any money? I have no idea.
I don't know. Suits? Sponsors? Selling their soul? I don't know.
Sponsors have money in the bear market? Hopefully.
I thought I saw yesterday NACA... Something happened where they either sold off or they bought something involving David Bailey. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Something just occurred.
That's tea for another time. I hope it's on. That's all. All right. But I keep hearing murmurings.
I don't think I'll go. It'd be too expensive, probably. It'd be like a multi-$1,000 weekend. And from what I saw last year, I don't think I'd fully enjoy it. I went to Prague.
It'll be a small crowd this year. It'll be small. I like the smaller crowds. So.
Okay, that'd be cool then. I've only been to two conferences, Plan D, which is where we met in person last year. So I couldn't go this past year. And then Prague. And that was awesome. Because it was more, I feel like at least the big conference is so sooty and shitcoiny. Yeah. And about like Apex asset Yeah. I'm like, never sell your Bitcoin, bro. And I don't think I'd have a good time. I mean, I would find my people, obviously. Anyway, we'll see. But that's that. So great. So to the listeners, yeah, I'll put a bunch of links in the description. And yeah, thanks again, Julian, for coming on. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Keith.
Ooh. All right. Bye. Take care, gang.